Welcome to the Pathways Podcast for the American Society for Cell Biology. My name is Mary Spiro. I'm your host. And today we are speaking with Alex McGillner from the Courant Institute and Department of Biology at New York University. Thanks for joining me today, Professor McGillner.
My pleasure.
So the American Society for Cell Biology publishes the journal Molecular Biology of the Cell. Currently, there is a call for abstracts for the 8th special issue on quantitative cell biology. The deadline for abstracts is November 1st. You are one of the issue editors, along with Jennifer Lippincott-Schwartz and Diane Lidke. You've also been an editor on previous iterations of this special edition. Tell me a little bit about the different expertise and experiences that the three of you bring to the editorial process. I know that Dr. Lippincott-Schwartz and Dr. Lidke are both deeply involved in imaging, fluorescent imaging, and you are a mathematician and a biologist.
It's a difficult question because we never thought about it. We don't tend to divide the expertise between the three of us. We just go with the flow. And there was never any issue like that. One person handles one kind of papers, another kind of papers.
Well, it seems to me that you, the three of you, are going to be looking for a broad spectrum of papers that cover biology and the mathematical, the quantitative side of things. How important is this relationship between the experimental biologist and a computational biologist?
I think it is of great importance, and this is becoming more important as time goes on. And the very simple reason for that is that the data that is coming out of the experiment is getting more and more quantitative every year, and the amount of data is greater and greater. And so the ultimate goal is the same as it always has been, to understand a life of cell. Decades ago, this understanding was based on qualitative experiments and a lot of intuitive thinking and guessing. Nowadays, we are trying to harness the quantitative nature of data more and more. And there are two things. So one is it's becoming almost impossible to just process this data using our brains. We have to use computers, and then we have to use computational tools, mathematical tools to process the data. Another is interpretation of the data, and that's where models come to mind, because the phenomena we are looking at are getting more and more complicated, and intuition is just not good enough anymore. We have to use the crutch of mathematics to understand them.
Now, the concept of combining mathematics and biology is not necessarily new. I mean, I wrote an article for ASCV about Darcy Thompson and all the measurements and things that that he took. But you're just saying like the ability to, that we're getting so much more data, and we also have the ability to process so much more data.
Yeah. Yeah. So the concept is not very new. It certainly came up in the 19th century. There were absolutely seminal studies in the 20th century. Just three examples, Lotka-Volterra, mathematical model of interaction between different species of animals. That was the beginning of 20th century. So using mathematical model, they explained the cycles through which populations are going. Then Alan Turing, his seminal paper in 1952, when he proposed a very good explanation for morphogenesis, for pattern formation in biology using math. And then in the same year, accidentally, Hodgkin and Huxley model of nerve impulse propagation. So, but those examples were very rare and kind of far separated from each other.
Yeah.
What is special now is that pretty much, I don't know, every second paper uses some kind of mathematical or computational tool. It's actually not very dissimilar from what happened to physics. I always encourage biologists to look at the example of physics. It was the same trajectory. Before 19th century, physics was very qualitative. And of course, mathematics was used since ancient times in physics, but rarely. And then as measurements in physics became really precise and quantitative, probably 18th, 19th century, then mathematics moved in big time, and nowadays it's basically inseparable from physics. Biology just going through the same trajectory, just delayed in time. Mm-hmm. So we're very lucky to be now in the middle of this quantitative revolution.
So since you've been an editor on previous issues, what sorts of abstracts are you hoping to see for this current request?
We really never think about topics much. We just want to see really good papers. We just want better and better quality. But normally what we have, there are a number of really good modeling papers that are kind of their main thrust is modeling, and data is used to support the model. Right? Then there majority of papers they don't have modeling. They are largely traditional biological papers, but with enhanced emphasis on quantitative aspects. Mm-hmm. So it became clear really, I don't know when, probably like in the 80s and early 90s, that biologists have to measure rates, measure concentrations, and do this back of the envelope estimates to see if their qualitative explanations make sense. To my mind, Tom Pollard, more than anybody else, pushed this concept that you have to measure things rather than just observe. So very often after those measurements, things are becoming relatively clear even without advanced mathematics. So I would say those papers are the majority where a lot of things are measured. Then you can kind of do an accounting. It's basically this much stuff goes from here to there, and in certain amount of time, and then the understanding you have is supported by those numbers.
Do the computational models? Do the models come before the experiment, or is it vice versa, or is it simultaneous?
There are all of the above. There are examples of all these scenarios. Sometimes there's a model in the beginning, and then there's data supporting this model or arguing against this model. Very often, so I would say the majority of cases, but not the prevailing majority, is when there's first this traditional cell biological study that comes up with comes down to certain cartoon, right? So what was happening before mathematical modeling came into biology was that many papers ended with like so-called figure seven, right? The cartoon of what's the qualitative scenario which is supported by previous six figures. So now this figure seven, instead of being a cartoon, is becoming a model supported by computer simulations. So that's maybe like 70% of papers like that. Mm-hmm. I personally favor, I think the future is with the papers that where modeling and experiment are used interchangeably. There's what some people call a feedback loop between theory and experiment. It's basically you have first certain rough data and you have some picture forming in your brain. Then you use mathematical model to make certain predictions. Then experimentalists design next tier of experiments, trying to test those predictions, which refines the models and so on. It's normally a very difficult and painful process, but in more and more cases, I observe it works. And I think those are the most spectacular studies.
We'll return to the Pathways podcast after these brief announcements. Here's what's happening this month with the American Society for Cell Biology. Cell Bio Virtual 2021 happens this December, but the final deadline for abstracts is October 12th. Don't miss your chance to present at the largest meeting for cell biologists in the world. Go to ASCB.org/CellBio2021 for information. You have until October 15th to apply to one of ASCB's many committees, or you can self-nominate to be considered for a seat on council. All you need to do is submit a CV and a statement of interest. For more information and to apply, go to ASCB.org/committees. Do you create beautiful scientific images? ASCB is once again looking for striking images or videos that feature any aspect of cell biological research, including light and electron micrographs and computer simulations. Submit your work by October 30th. Visit ASCB.org and look for the image contest link under Policy and Outreach. That's it for this month. Now let's get back to the show. So what are some of the new innovations, new technological innovations in computational biology and quantitative biology that you're excited about?
What excites me the most is the merging of traditional mathematical modeling methods and this new tools of data analysis. So in the most glamorous examples, those are machine learning and artificial intelligence computer tools. The most interesting thing about these days is that the amount of quantitative data is enormous. And the first thing before we start coming up with mathematical model is to process this data and to see what it tells us, which at least in my work and in work of many people I know is becoming a bottleneck. So actual modeling is becoming relatively easy after you see what the data is. And the amount and the complexity of the data is such that it's just becoming impossible just looking at, for example, micrographs to understand what's going on. So we need computational tools to process this data first. And so the way I describe it, it sounds like there are two stages. There's data processing and modeling. But the beauty is that those two things are becoming, are starting to merge. I'm not sure I can describe it in any more clear way. I'll give you just example of one paper that I loved recently. So there's traction force microscopy. It allows us to measure and image the forces that cells apply to their surrounding, right? And the qualitative concept is really simple. You put the cell on flexible deformable substrate, embed fluorescent beads in this substrate and measure the displacement of the bead. And then you can reverse engineer the forces from displacements using very difficult mathematical equations of elasticity theory. So it sounds simple in concept. In practice, it's extremely difficult because it's not what is called well-posed mathematical problem. There are kind of big errors that are coming from doing this inverse procedure. So there was a recent paper from Yuli Wang and his collaborators that they did absolutely brilliant thing. So they did this process on the computer. Instead of putting actual live cell on the substrate, they used a model, a mathematical model of the cell on the flexible substrate. So there, the forces generated by a cell are prescribed, and then displacements are generated. And of course, a computer allows you to do experiments at enormous rate, like orders and orders of magnitude faster than what's happening in nature. So they generated, I don't know, like hundreds of thousands of images, right? And then they trained artificial intelligence network on those images. Then they took experimental images of displacement and asked this computer system, trained system, what are the forces? And the results were much better and much more accurate than using this torturous mathematical procedure.
But how did they know they were accurate? See, that's the thing. Are there some things that are too hard to measure?
Yeah, so then they did control experiments when they compared like what traditional numerical method and this one did. And it's not a proof yet that this works better, but all the indications are that this works better than the traditional method.
I've seen similar papers where they have actual cells growing on like what would almost look like a hairbrush, where they have little posts, right, and then the cells are displacing and deflecting posts, right, and then they're measuring the deflection of those posts, and that's how they're getting the forces and the, you know, how much the cell is pulling as it's moving along. But that's you know, like it's a 2D situation as opposed to a 3D situation. So is that physiologically relevant? Who knows? I mean, there are like all these different questions. I like the bead one though, because that can be in 3D, correct? That can be
exactly. The biggest problem is that we are now moving from 2D to 3D. And everything is becoming just unmanageable. Like cell migration models that are very beautiful and work nice in 2D, there's almost nothing in 3D. Just too messy, too difficult.
Yeah, throw all those actin models out. Throw all the cytoskeleton models out. They don't. They're not relevant.
I wouldn't say that. That's what many people argue. I think they're great lessons, but still, when we get to the specifics. Like there's this saying, devil is in detail, detail in 3D are becoming so difficult that you need new methods to understand it quantitatively.
I have to make this comment. I know the people listening to the podcast cannot see you because I don't have a picture. I should have a picture of this. I love the fact that behind you, there's a chalkboard with like 1,000 different calculations on it. So exactly what I was hoping to see when I got you on the phone.
It betrays my age, if nothing else. I just got used to it when I was young to write the blackboard.
Well, so are there some processes, biological processes, that are just really, really hard to measure?
Of course, yeah.
Some we haven't been able to do yet?
That's a difficult question for me. Some that we, well, for example, one good simple example, forces inside the cell, right? The only thing I saw, well, a couple of things I saw so far. One is there's synthetic biology, which is also really a beautiful thing. So one can engineer, for example, some cross-linking proteins, with fluorescent markers that start giving signals when they're stretched or pulled or something above certain thresholds. So there's it's some indication that there are forces above the threshold in certain parts of the cell. But again, it's more qualitative than quantitative. You basically can only say the forces is lower than something or higher than something. Another really beautiful tool I saw recently is this is for multicellular tissues, is to put some kind of high-tech oil droplet inside the tissue, and then it deforms according to what the cells around this droplet are doing mechanically. And then from this deformation, you can figure out something about this force. Again, it's kind of semi-quantitative. So I would say accurate force measurement is really in its infancy inside the cell.
Well, where do you hope to see the future of quantitative cell biology head? Where would you like to see it go?
I would say a couple of dreams. One is probably unusual. People, I haven't heard people talk much about it, and maybe I'm mistaken about it, but my heart is in simple systems. For example, in cell migration, I was sticking for a couple of decades with fish keratocyte cells. And I was collaborating with Julie Theriot, who is the leader of biophysics of keratocyte vermiculopodia. We understood some very important, to my mind, very important things about those vermiculopodia. But now what I observe is the community simply moved on, while there's still absolutely fundamental question about this simple system. And there are lots of examples, like I heard this from people in yeast community, that it's harder and harder to get funding to work with yeast. I believe that we will not go very far in basic science if we do not understand the simple systems completely. Again, my intuition comes from physics. So nowadays, of course, there's physics of complex systems and soft matter physics. But before, there were centuries of physics like solid state physics, physics of crystals, which is much simpler. So I would say I really wish we could have massive efforts in trying to understand relatively simple systems completely, right? Of course, what completely means, who knows? But the point is to continue the process of working with simple systems.
Get back to the basics a little bit.
Yeah, get to the basics and don't sweep under the rug some questions that we don't understand yet. So that's one thing, but another, which is probably more conventional, is embracing complexity. So it's a little bit counterintuitive and contradicts the first thing, but there's this dichotomy between a reductionist approach, to trying to distill some simple picture, and understanding the full complex systems. And I think this blend of traditional math and data science, that's what gives us finally the tools to do something about this complex complex systems. So that for now, the paradigm, I think, again, mimics what happened in physics in 20th century. So when quantum theory came into being, many of its laws were so contradictory that, not contradictory, I would rather say counterintuitive. So there's famous saying, which I think is ascribed normally to Lev Landau. He was saying the greatest achievement of modern physics is that we can finally understand things that we cannot imagine. So intuition completely fail us, but if we stick with mathematical laws, we will have models with predictive power. So in biology, I would maybe rephrase it, saying that with this modern blend of data analysis and mathematical modeling, maybe we will have ability to predict things that we cannot understand yet. So many of those super complex models, they do have predictive power, but we really can't explain in words what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I definitely believe that after that will come a stage when we'll start understanding those complex systems. So you know, that's what I'm hoping to see at some point.
It almost sounds like a philosophical point of view.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that you want people to know about this forthcoming call for papers, for the issue? Anything you want people to know about quantitative cell biology in general?
Just embrace the numbers. I would say there's still people either afraid of math or kind of resistant to it because there's a lot of other things going on. So why go into one more thing? I would say embrace it because this is, we are going the same way physics is going. Without some understanding of math, it will be just impossible for experimentalists to work. And definitely submit the good stuff to us. That's maybe not a scientific comment, but I wanted to say it. There's, of course, this game these days of impact factors. So the best papers are sent to Nature Group, to this glamour journals, as they call it. My heart is still with society journals, like Molecular Biology of the Cell, Biophysical Journal, where we do not use this absolutely ridiculous argument, like whether this paper is conceptually new, whether it's great or not. We just look at the science. Is the science solid? Does it advance our understanding in not an incremental way? And those are journals run by us, by scientists. So support the community, submit your papers to us.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. Sure. You've been absolutely a delight to speak with. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Maria. Thanks.
The Pathways Podcast is a production of the American Society for Cell Biology. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.